During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHP. We're going to talk to Mark Boerichter, former Chiefs wide receiver, in studio now. Couple of notes from around the NFL. Of course, last night, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, the Rams dismantled the Cardinals 34-11. So the Rams advance, and they'll take on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Also yesterday, the Las Vegas Raiders let it be known via Twitter that they have let go of GM Mike Mayock. And so, Jake, your thoughts on the firing of Mike Mayock?
I mean, team went to the – I think they way over exceeded the expectations. I mean, midway through the season, who thought that team was going to go to the playoffs? So the talent – I mean, the talent's there. And I felt like Mayock kind of was tied at the hip with Gruden, so I don't think it's that big of a shock. I don't think it's crazy at all, but I don't know. I think there's worse GMs in the league than him, but there's only 32 of those jobs, and he's out. I like Mike Mayock a lot.
Right. I think the fact that a couple of his first-round draft picks were already out of the organization did not bode well for him.
No, it did not. But to my point, it's like how much of that was Mayock, how much of that was Gruden? Like, they were tied together, so... I think Gruden wanted to bring in a guy after he ran McKenzie out of there, wanted to bring in a guy he could actually, you know, oversee and tell what to do, and that's kind of what he did, in my opinion.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah, you're starting to see that trend now, right, where you hire the head coach and then the GM.
On that note, I said this last week. Jake, if you remember, Nate, if you take notes like you say you do, it'll be in your notebook, and I'll say this again. And Mark, you could weigh in on this, and then we can get into Chiefs and Steelers and Chiefs and Bills. But if I was in charge of the Minnesota Vikings, I would be looking very closely at hiring the combination of Ryan Poles and Eric Bieniemy as my GM and head coach. And so when, you know, because when people just, oh, you know, Bieniemy should get a job. Well, where is he a good fit? And also, you guys talk about the GM-head coach relationship. You want to have a good relationship between those two, because that can prevent you from having success very quickly. If your GM and your head coach are not on the same page, well, you would think that...
Just look at Flores in Miami, right?
Sure. You would think that Ryan Poles, out of the Chiefs organization, who has been interviewed for all, is going to be interviewed, but when it's all said and done, I saw a report that he's going to do a Zoom interview today with Minnesota, but... I think that would be a great landing spot for Eric Bieniemy, and I think he'd have a good chance to do well there. And you pair him with a GM that knows him, and they could be on the same page like Ryan Poles. I think that if I was Minnesota, that's where I would go. And I don't want to lose either one of those guys from the organization, but they both deserve to be in heavy consideration to be a GM / head coach, those two.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Minnesota would be very wise to take advantage of that opportunity.
I think so. You know, Eric Bieniemy was a running backs coach there in Minnesota for a while as well, right? So there's some familiarity there. I don't know. I'm starting to get to the point where I don't think Eric Bieniemy is going to get a head coaching job there anytime soon.
Did it mean anything to you? I heard Soren talking about this yesterday. Did it mean anything to you that Andy Reid, and he wasn't even really asked about it, said he thinks he's getting a job this time around? Andy Reid usually has to offer up things like that.
That was an interesting comment from him the other day. I did hear that from Andy Reid, that is, that he thinks he will, which makes you wonder if he knows something that, you know, everybody else doesn't know yet. I think here's the thing that people need to understand, too. You start seeing all these names floated around, right, this time of year, with all these interviews, potential, you know, younger whiz kid type, you know, names that are out there, guys that are moving up the ranks, which is great. But a lot of that stuff, you know, obviously is floated out by agents and different things of potential candidates. But then, you know, teams are doing their due diligence. And I think the one thing that I see out of it, too, is unless there's a top-name guy out there like Andy Reid was the year, right, when Philadelphia let him go, you know, he was at the time the Chargers were in San Diego, right? There was talk that he was going to go, and they never let him leave Kansas City, right, which I think was the right way to go about it on everything with him. Brian Flores could be in that mix a little bit based on what he's done with the Dolphins and stuff. But unless you have a guy that's had a lot of success that, you know, it's been time to move on from the organization, there's no rush if you're an NFL team right now, right? You don't have recruiting, you know, you don't have recruiting, you don't have a signing day coming up. Like, there's no rush to go get a head coach. And this is where I think, you know, the NFL's tried to change some of the rules about interviewing, you know, during weeks and off weeks during the playoffs and different things. But you know, interview the guys you want to interview that are no longer playing right now. And then if you think the guy's the right fit and that's actually your guy, then go get him. But at the same time, sit around and wait until you actually, you know, talk to all the people you have. Like, I know that I think Bieniemy's only had one request so far this year. I think it was the Broncos, potentially. But that doesn't mean he's not going to have an opportunity, to your point, Stephen, of with the Minnesota or with somebody else out there either. But the more this goes on through the hiring cycles, when you start looking at some of the coaches that have been hired the last couple of years, obviously there's some guys that are having some success, but then you're seeing, you know, a year or two later, all of a sudden there's a different coach there again. They obviously didn't find the right guy. And so there's going to be opportunities. The other thing with this is it an opportunity that he actually wants to take, right, with an organization that you feel comfortable with, that you truly are going to get, I don't want to call it a fair shot, but a true opportunity to turn the franchise around. Because we all know that if you're, in most cases, firing your head coach, you clearly were not very good the last year, and maybe the year before that also. So you're going to be picking high in the draft. And, you know, there's a lot of work to be done, and whether you're given the true opportunity to fix it or not.
Nate Bucati.
You guys were having a pretty good conversation last week about the analytics movement in football, and we were talking about, you know, Brandon Staley's shenanigans in Los Angeles with the Chargers and all that. And I think it kind of translates to the conversation about what coaches are getting hired these days. You mentioned the young hotshot guy, the young guy that's, you know, maybe a savant when it comes to scheming up plays offensively or defensively. And I hear a lot of conversation about, do we want an offensive guy or do we want a defensive guy? And I can't remember what former player I saw. It might have been one of the Schwartz brothers. But somebody had said, instead of asking that, owners should be asking, we need a leader.
Right.
We need somebody that can lead people. And it doesn't it seem like that part of it is becoming less and less prioritized by ownership groups? I mean, would John Harbaugh ever have gotten the job with the Ravens? You know, I mean, he was
a special teams coach.
Right.
In Philadelphia.
He wasn't some.
Not that that's a bad thing. I'm just saying he was not a a special teams coordinator. But
it wasn't like, this guy's going to bring in a new offensive game plan. It's going to revolutionize everything.
Correct.
And that's why we got to hire him.
Correct.
He is a good leader. He could organize things and run a good program. And it makes you wonder, is that like, are people even thinking that way anymore when they go to hire people?
It's a good question, because you can go look at the Jacksonville situation with Urban Meyer, right? And some people may talk about him being a great leader, but then you see all the stuff that happened at Ohio State and all the different things that were, I don't want to say covered up, but clearly BS'd. Right? Clearly BS in front of everybody when the receipts are there, right?
Yeah.
Type of thing. Like, is that somebody you want truly leading your organization? And that's just one example, right? But I think there is some merit to that, because, and I also think that's why you start seeing some of these offensive coordinators and defensive coordinators, it's about the scheme and it's about all that, but the assumption is there that because they're a coordinator, they're a good leader, right? Whereas you're more of a manager. There are a lot of managers in this world, in the corporate world and everything else, that aren't good leaders, right?
Right.
They just happen to be in management positions in a sense. And then there's other people that are great leaders that aren't in those type of roles or potential leaders. And so I'm with you. I think that has to come into consideration, because You know, I look at Mike Tomlin as a perfect example with Pittsburgh. Obviously, he's been there a long time, hasn't had a losing season in his times there. But I enjoy, and I said this on the pregame show on Sunday, I enjoy listening to him in press conferences because he's very direct. He's not going to answer all the questions, right? He's going to get up there from time to time and not say a lot. But he's also, I feel, authentic and honest. You know, like when you heard him talking about their previous matchup against the Steelers in December, he used the word, they crushed us and nothing went well. You know, where a lot of coaches would be like, oh, I don't know. You know, we just didn't do a lot of things right. Like he's authentic and truly a leader of men. He's still going to defend his guys that he needs to and not throw them under the bus in public. But there's an authenticity to it. And I think that's the other piece why teams don't need to be in a rush here. Because, you know, you all know there's people that interview well, and that's actually not who they are, right? When you get into the – if you don't do your due diligence and I don't want to call it reference checks, but going through all those kinds of things, you're not going to find out, you know, truly who people are just through that interview process. That's why I don't think there needs to be this huge rush.
We have Mark Boerichter in studio. And, Mark, let's get to the Chiefs and what they did to the Steelers before we move on and get a preview of Chiefs and Bills. One of the highlights of the game was the performance by Jerick McKinnon.
Mm-hmm.
He looked terrific, not only as a receiver, but running the football all the way around. He looked really, really good. And I haven't checked if anyone eclipsed the number from last night's game, but McKinnon became only the fifth player in the last nine seasons to record at least 60 rushing yards and 60 receiving yards in a postseason game. And up until last night, 142 yards in scrimmage, the most of any player in the playoffs so far. And so, look, I thought he would be a nice complimentary player in the playoffs if he was healthy. You know, we raved about him for the people that were up there in training camp watching him up in St. Joe. But, damn, he looked good. And it reminded you of how dynamic the Chiefs offense could be with a game-breaking running back like it was with Kareem Hunt, like it was with playoff Damian Williams. And not that he's either one of those guys, but you could at least, I mean, you saw it right there, how that offense can be taken to a different level with a running back that has that type of big play threat.
I like to say a whole nother level.
Sure you do.
Whole nother.
Yeah.
I'm with you. It says a lot, I think, about Brett Veach, Andy Reid, and acquiring talent, right? Because there's a lot more depth, I think, at this running back position than we probably all realize. And I know that McKinnon looked good at training camp, but over the course of the year, you didn't see him all that much. You know, it was the Edwards-Helaire show, the Darrell Williams show, maybe some McKinnon, right? Then Edwards-Helaire gets hurt, and then it's Gore, even before McKinnon. And so this is the key to what championship organizations and championship teams have, is it's guys that understand their role on the team, don't complain about it, right? And then when they get the opportunity to go and perform. And now you're looking at this offense going, okay, Darrell Williams can't push off his toe. He's only in for a few plays. You go to McKinnon, and all of a sudden you become extremely explosive. That's scary for a defensive coordinator on the other side to look at this, right? Because, you know, I don't think – I'm of the opinion I don't think Edwards-Helaire is going to play again this year. I think.
Oh, really?
Know, yeah, I just think that after, you know, trying to give it a go last week, Darrell Williams tried to go – couldn't, so I think they were also like, we're playing Pittsburgh here. We should have this game, so it was ugly at first, but let's just rest him and out. And then McKinnon goes and has this type of game. You've got weapons all around, like Byron Pringle, two touchdowns this game, right? DeMarcus Robinson had four or five catches in this game. Like, you're getting the contributions from your depth pieces that we talked about all year, like who's going to step up in these cases. You're getting those guys to do that right now, and that's what makes this team scary.
When you think ball security, do you think DeMarcus Robinson when he's running in the open field?
No. I don't think ball security, and I don't think directional GPS or anything.
Just waving the football.
Yeah, it's just.
It was funny because the Chiefs were, I think when he had the one where he just was waving it around, I think the Chiefs were up 21-7. Like, oh, it's not funny.
It's going to be a problem.
If it's a tie game and someone slaps the football out of his hands.
Right.
And so I laughed at it, but then I thought, stop that. But he won't, because this is, I mean, hell, coaches laugh about it. He's not going to turn up field very often. You know, he, a little bit of a dance, maybe go backwards. And then he's going to brandish the football so all can see. And so, again, it's funny. It's ha-has when they're up big. But I don't want him to do that against Buffalo if it's a close game. I don't want that.
You know what impresses me about it is he does it every catch.
Right.
Even if there's, like, just he finds a way.
Oh, he's going
to
do it.
He finds a reason at some point during the play to stick that ball out with one hand and wave it around.
And they talked to him. You heard Dave Tobe talking about him. It says it drives him crazy.
It reminds me of Joe Pesci's sidekick in Home Alone. Remember how his trademark is, we're the wet bandits. We're going to leave the water running in every house that we rob. And Joe Pesci's like, that's the dumbest. Why are you doing that? This is stupid. Well, we got to have a trademark. And it's like he came up with this. Like, I got to have a thing. I got to have something that everybody knows that it's me with the ball. So I'm going to do something really stupid and wave it around every time I catch the ball. Like, he goes out of his way to do it every time.
It's a problem. It's a problem.
Wave the football in the air. Wave it like you just don't care.
And it's like, it's obvious that no one likes it, but he's like, I'm still doing it. I don't care. You know, it's
to your point, Stephen, too. It's funny when you're up 21-7, right? It's funny when you're blowing teams out. But when it happens, like, let's go back to this too, okay? LeSean McCoy, right? A year or two ago, when he was here, had a problem fumbling the football, right? Did a lot of the same stuff, and all of a sudden he wasn't playing anymore.
Yeah.
Right, because it became a problem during the regular season. The good news is that DeMarcus Robinson has not fumbled the football yet necessarily, right, in a situation where it's hurt this team. But it could down the stretch here in the playoffs.
It's just remarkable. And you know, Dave Tobe said it. They've talked to him about it, but he's just not. And maybe, you could speak to this. You get out there in the heat of the battle, and sometimes you forget things.
This is my view on DeMarcus Robinson, and what I think is that I feel like he believes he's a good player, okay? I will say this. He's a good player, okay? But I believe that he believes in himself that he is a better player than what he actually is, okay? And when I say that is, you have to understand your own abilities sometimes and what your role is on the team, okay? And I think, and I can tell you this as a former guy who was a third and fourth receiver on the team, right, that sometimes when you get the opportunity to make a catch, you want to go make a play because you want to keep earning more playing time and more playing time, more playing time. But he's been here long enough now. He's got to understand that every time he touches the ball, he's not going to take it for a touchdown. I think he watches Tyreek Hill too much, in a sense, and thinks, hey, I can juke five of these guys, and then I'm going to be cavalier with the football at the same time, as opposed to just catch the ball, get upfield, protect the football, and you're probably going to break a big play at some point yourself, because you have the ability to do that. So for me, it's with him, it's about understanding actually what his role is on this team, right? And not trying to be greedy in a sense. And I'm not saying he's a selfish player. That's not what I'm trying to say. But understanding what his role is on this team. But protecting the football is a bigger issue than trying to make extra plays. To me, like, that's the part for me that scares me.
Well, the thing that's crazy is, like, do you ever see Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce brandish the football around the way Stephen? I don't remember ever seeing them do that.
That's the part. That's the part for me, like, we joke a lot about, you know, I've said this a lot, he needs a compass, right? He needs a GPS because he always runs backwards, like, first and tries to make extra moves and everything. But the football piece, that's one thing if you're just trying, where I'm going with this is it's one thing if you're trying to make a big play by, you know, trying to juke a few guys. It's a different story when you're not protecting the football.
Real quick, when you said you don't think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to come back, do you think he's healthy enough to come back and the Chiefs are just like,
no,
we're good?
I don't think he's healthy enough to come back. I think he tried to give it a go last week, one day in practice, and then he didn't practice the next two. And so I think it's a situation where they win this week, right, play the AFC Championship. He might have an opportunity to play AFC Championship, you know, the Super Bowl if they get that far type of thing. You know, because we're talking 3-4 weeks away yet, right, on all that kind of stuff. But I don't think you're going to see him this week. I think, you know, trying to give it a go one day in practice and then not practice the next two doesn't tell me there was a setback necessarily. It just tells me he's not ready.
We have Mark Boerichter in studio back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Mark Boerichter, Sunday night, features a matchup not only of two of the best teams in the NFL, but clearly two of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Where would you put Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen on your top quarterbacks list right now?
Well, they're in the top tier. They certainly are.
They both in the top five?
I think so, yeah. I really do.
So number one is, are you still Mahomes number one?
Yeah, I'll be a homer there.
That's
right.
I think
Aaron Rodgers is number two. Brady's in there, obviously still doing it. Josh Allen is certainly in that mix.
21-25 for 308 yards and five touchdowns. Mahomes, 30-39, 404 yards, five touchdowns, one interception. First time ever we're seeing two quarterbacks face off in the playoffs coming off five touchdown games.
Yeah. You're looking at the
passing charts.
I am looking at this game saying whoever wins this game is winning the AFC.
You're right.
And I'm really stepping out on a ledge by saying that.
No, but you are.
But that's these two teams, I think these two teams are playing the best football right now in the AFC. You can mention Cincinnati in that mix. I think Cincinnati is going to beat Tennessee. But I think you go back to just the playoff experience that the Chiefs have. And, let's go back to the Buffalo game earlier this year. It was, 15, 16 weeks ago now already? Was that week five here, right, I think, during that time? You can't take a ton away from that game because it was so long ago. The things you can take away from that is if you're Steve Spagnuolo, don't put Daniel Sorensen in a position, right, one-on-one with Stephon Diggs or covering Dawson Knox one-on-one down the sideline. There's a few things you can take away from schematically on things, but these two teams have changed so much over 15 weeks. I think it's going to be a battle. And I think that when I go back to the playoff experience, one of the things we heard before that game, right, out there in the narrative was after Buffalo lost here a year ago in the playoffs, they sat around and talked about things and said, hey, what do we got to do to take the next step to beat the Chiefs on things? Because the Chiefs have been the gold standard in the AFC the last 3 years, right? Three straight AFC championship games, two straight Super Bowls. And it's an opportunity here on Sunday. You're going to know going into the game whether if you win, you're hosting the AFC championship game. Both these teams will know that. This is a big one, man. This is going to be a fun week. It's going to be a long week as we sit here on Tuesday waiting for Sunday to come around. But I'm excited to watch this game. I really am. It's going to be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's just even if I wasn't a huge Chiefs fan or
yes.
a fan of the Bills,
yes.
this is the game. This is the game you circle out of the four, right?
Yeah, I think
if
so.
If you're just an NFL fan, if you're looking for a sexy matchup.
There's a reason why they're playing this at 5:30 on Sunday.
Okay, so here's my question for you. The thing that makes Josh Allen so good is the dual threat part, right? Like, he's puts up good numbers passing, but those rushing numbers are what take him to a different level. He's run for 763 yards this year.
Take him to a what?
A whole nother level. Sorry, a whole nother level.
Talk right.
Another. If you're the Chiefs, are you if you have to prioritize stopping one of those two things, are you more worried about Allen the passer or Allen the rusher?
Because Bill Moss said make Willie Gay the spy.
Yeah. I'm more worried about Josh Allen the passer when he's outside the pocket and moving, just like Patrick Mahomes does. If it takes Josh Allen...
So keep him in the pocket.
If Josh Allen, and you have to use a spy type of thing, and Willie Gay could be the guy, but he's got to play more than 17 snaps like he did on Sunday.
What?
Like that's a different. Conversation. But
okay,
like,
what about that conversation?
I don't understand. I don't
it's
get
important.
It. I don't get it. The only he's your most athletic linebacker, And Nick Bolton's had a tremendous year, led the league in tackle, all that kind of stuff, right? Nick Bolton's a great player, and I'm not taking anything away from him. But there, Willie Gay brings a different energy to this defense also, and he's your most athletic guy. And to me, he's got to be on the field more. And maybe it was a specific situation with personnel last week against the Steelers that was the case, but I don't know. There's sometimes you just look at it, the snap count, and I know sometimes snap counts can be a little deceiving too, right, on things, but when he only plays that amount, it's either there's something going on there or it was specific to what was happening in the game. But Willie Gay, to me, would be the perfect type of guy to be a spy because he's got the speed and the agility and the athleticism to do that. And, you know, Josh Allen can hurt you in a couple different ways. And I think it's big for the Chiefs this Sunday to get out to a good start defensively. And not that Josh Allen's going to become frustrated or anything like that, but you got to put him in a position where he feels he needs to get in a shootout with Patrick Mahomes.
Put him on under
and he's
pressure.
Got the ability to have a shootout with Patrick Mahomes. Don't get me wrong, right? Mm-hmm. This isn't going to be a situation where all of a sudden you're like, okay, he'll fold if you put the pressure on him and stuff like that. But I think you got to get him pressing in some situations where he feels like he's got to make an additional play somewhere along the line.
Here's some of the snap counts that stand out from the defense from the game on Sunday. So Thornhill led all defensive players, and so this is significant, and I'll tell you why here in a minute. Thornhill led all defensive players in snaps with 67. So that's 99%. Snead was second with 62, then Hughes was third with 59, followed by Matthew with 55, and Ward with 54. So all defensive backs there. Then after that, Frank Clark had 42, which is 62% of the snaps. Wharton had 40. I thought Wharton was terrific in that game. Nick Bolton led all the linebackers with 39 snaps. Melvin Ingram had 37 snaps. Dan Sorensen had 36 snaps. Chris Jones, 35 snaps. And then you get into the rest of the linebackers. Hitchens had 29 snaps. Ben Neiman had 22 snaps. Willie Gay, the only two defenders that had fewer snaps than Willie Gay, Armani Watson, Zane Anderson.
Yeah.
And look, they won. They won in an impressive fashion. But that is that is odd to me. I don't. That's
the only thing I can think of. Again, is it was how this game went and what they did personnel wise. Because you look at the defensive line rotation, it's pretty even across the board too, right? And I know they rotate a lot of guys in there on all that, but it is odd to me that he only had 17. And then, you know, you talked about Tyrann Mathieu. He played 81% of snaps. He didn't record a single stat in the game. Not a pass breakup, not a tackle, not even a half tackle. And I'm not saying that he didn't do anything out there, but that's a little concerning also.
Okay, so and Jake, see if you can guess this, if you remember this. There were three defenders that took all the snaps the first time around against the Buffalo Bills. Who are they?
Repeat
anybody.
One of them was Dan Sorensen.
I don't know. We're playing a game. I'm not going to tell you right now.
I feel like that was back.
Guess.
I feel like that was back in the why is Dan Sorensen on the field for every play?
You need to make a guess.
Honey
that's,
Badger.
That's my yeah. guess.
I'm
is
saying
Dan
Matthew
Sorensen.
Was one of them.
Okay. Who else? You say Sorensen.
L'Jarius Sneed.
And L'Jarius Sneed. And the reason I bring that up, it is significant that Thornhill led the team in snaps last weekend because against the Bills, the three guys that took every snap defensively, Matthew Sneed and Sorensen.
Boom. Now we're good.
And so even though Thornhill was active, he only took 25 snaps, 44%. And so that's change number one.
Yeah.
Those roles have reversed.
Yes.
Number two, Chris Jones didn't play that first game.
Correct.
Number three, Charvarius Ward didn't play that first game. And then I'll say number four, Willie Gay was working his way back in. He only had 25 snaps, 44%. of the snaps, but then is he? I would say he's going to get more snaps, but is he?
I don't know. I think he will this week. Again, I don't want to look too much into it. It's just baffling to me that he only had 17 on Sunday, right? I don't want to look too much into it because it
I just like to know. Yeah, I like to understand
it. It's interesting, though, that he only had 17. And that's where, and maybe this week will change, right? Maybe all of a sudden he's getting 50, 60% of snaps this week. But this is a big challenge. It's a big challenge for this team.
So no Chris Jones the first time around, no Charvarius Ward the first time around, no Melvin Ingram the first time around, and Thornhill.
No Juan Thornhill.
Right, Thornhill and Sorensen's roles were reversed the first time around.
Yeah. So there's some big changes defensively that happened since the first meeting. That's why I say that was 15 weeks ago.
Right.
It's a lot different.
But that's significant.
Absolutely.
And that's significant. And then Willie Gay was still working his way back into it. That's significant at every level of the defense.
Yeah.
So there's every reason to believe, okay.
How many snaps did Nick Bolton get in that game?
First time around, he got 43 snaps.
He's a better player now than he was then.
Yeah. But that was, again, that's 5 weeks in. You're talking about a rookie linebacker working him. And you talk about Willie Gay, too. He was coming back off the concussion, all that kind of stuff.
There's
a lot of changes. Yeah, a lot of changes that have happened.
And Ingram. And you, I mean, look, you didn't have Ingram or Chris Jones in that game.
Yeah.
You tell me that didn't make a difference, Nate? Wow, you're crazy.
I think it makes a big difference. The thing about Josh Allen I'm looking at, you know, when we've had our conversations about him over the years, and I didn't believe in him. I didn't think he was going to become as good as he already is. And then one of the big reasons was I didn't think his accuracy was up to snuff. And, you know, you look at his first year, 53% completion percentages. Second year, 59%. Those are terrible completion percentages. And then all of a sudden in 2020, he jumped up to 69% completion percentage. And I was like, man, I don't think that's very common that you see a guy just develop accuracy. He's dropped back a little bit this year. He's at 63.3%. Patriots game, he had a great, very efficient game. But that's 20th among regular starters in the NFL. So he's still dangerous. I'm not saying he's not. He's got a huge arm.
Right.
He can hit big throws in crucial times. But he is not as accurate as most of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL. To me, you got to make sure he doesn't kill you with some big running plays and he doesn't hit you with some of those big plays. Make him hit those shorter passes because he's going to miss fire on some. And some of those threw 15 picks this year.
Yeah.
And a lot of that's because those passes sometimes are off target.
That's why I say I think the Chiefs need to put some pressure on him, right?
Yeah.
And not that you want to force – again, he's got the ability. We all know that. I'm not saying he's going to fold under the pressure, but I think you need to get him thinking this has got to be a shootout. I'm not going to force a couple throws here or there.
We've got Mark Boerichter in studio. We'll be right back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us, Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati, with former Chiefs wide receiver Mark Boerichter. The Bills come in with the number one ranked defense. We talk about Josh Allen and talk about how great their offense can be when it's clicking, but their defense has been very good for most of the season. And we see the Chiefs now, it appears, at least against the Steelers for a couple of quarters, they were hitting on all cylinders. What about that matchup, the Buffalo Bills defense coming in to try to slow down what they saw from the Chiefs on Sunday night?
Well, I like the Chiefs offense still on this. I know I'm being a homer on that, but this is a really good Bills defense, as you just mentioned. And they don't even have their best defensive back, who's been out all year with a torn ACL. So, this is a really, really good Bills team overall, but their defense is really good. And I just got done saying, you don't take too much away from 15 weeks ago when they played, but there was, a turnover when the Chiefs were going in to score in the second half. Patrick Mahomes, threw it off the defensive end, right? Tipped it and caught it. One went through Tyreek Hill's hands down deep in your own territory for a pick six. If the Chiefs take care of the football and don't turn it over, I think they win this game. But this is why I like, just as a football fan, and you mentioned this earlier, Steve, I'm just genuinely excited to watch this game Sunday because it could be a high flying affair, or this game could be, 21-19 type of game where nobody can get anything done. This game could get into the 40s on both sides. I think 30 points is going to be the number that these two teams need to get to in order to win this game, right? And You know, the Chiefs come out and struggle early offensively like they did this past week. They're going to be in trouble. They're going to be in trouble. So they got to get that fixed. And the emergence of McKinnon has been great. I think you got to be balanced. But I think, you know, this is just going to be a super, super fun game to watch if you're a football fan.
What's the score going to be?
I'll say, I'll go 31-30 Chiefs.
What's the number at now, Jake? Is it 50?
It went to 54
four?
Yesterday. I haven't looked this morning, but it was 54 and it was dropped to 2.5. It's up to 55 right now. 55 and 2.5 still. Chiefs favored 2.5, total 55.
I'll say the Chiefs 31-30, but it would not surprise me if Buffalo wins this game. They're a good team.
Stop it. who wins the other AFC playoff game?
Cincinnati.
Yeah. Are we just too dismissive? I already told you I'm dismissive of Tennessee, and I need to check myself before I wreck myself.
I'm not overly, dismissive about Tennessee because Mike Vrabel does a good job of playing within the scheme of what they do, right? They are good. They are good at what they do. But I just – they're not a team that's going to – to me, that's going to go out and score enough points to win a lot of games.
Are they the,
you have to truly play into their game plan.
Are they? Do they remind you of the Chiefs of 95 and 97?
Yeah, I would say that.
They have a better quarterback, but I just feel like that's a, you know,
that's
regular season.
Yeah, run the football, yeah.
The terrific formula to win, and then you get to the playoffs, yeah. And you go up against the better quarterback, you're like, ooh.
Yeah.
Because, against, I mean, they're, you can say whatever you want about Tannehill. Would you rather have him than Burrow?
No. No.
Would you rather have him than Mahomes?
No.
Would you rather have him than Josh Allen?
No.
That's why they're not going to go to the Super Bowl. That'll hold them back.
And NFC, I like the Packers. And I like the Rams on the road, by the way, against Tampa Bay.
Ooh. Ooh. I think like it was Bill Barnwell with his formula. He has the Chiefs and the Rams in the Super Bowl.
That was my pick at the beginning of the year.
Do you have anything on that?
Just my prize.
That's not really your pick.
No, that's not. Yeah.
No, you have to have some dollars attached to that for it to be your pick. We will
pass them right now.
Thank you, Mark Boerichter.
Thank you.
Coming up, we'll have Matt Derrick and Kevin Ellis from the Kansas City Comets between now and 10 o'clock right here on WHB.